This is the joy of gaming. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming podcast. I'm your host, Rich Lepore, and I am here with
Jordan Alseca
and Tim McNeil.
And we are in a new studio, brand new. That's why we had a little, or more than a little delay between episodes. We had a little issue with our with the studio we were recording in, but I think we have a much better solution now. I'm hoping the podcast sounds equally good. Right now, Tim and Jordan are sharing a mic. So how's that over there, guys? A little, get some Bruce Springsteen backup singer going on, right?
It's not too bad, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a much closer to Jordan than I've ever been before.
Well, you know, maybe that's okay. Rebonding in the light of the podcast coming back. I know, man, my jokes at the beginning are always real bad. But we have so much good stuff to talk about that it doesn't even matter. We've been playing games for, what, a month and a half now and not had a chance to talk about them? So we have so many games we've been playing. We're really coming up on, gaming season, kicking into full tilt as far as new releases and all of that. So we're going to talk about games we've been playing. We're going to talk about news. There's been a lot of news, Jordan.
Yeah, there's been several things. Well, more in the last 2 weeks, honestly, because when we were planning to record.
In front of the mic, man.
Okay.
In front of the mic.
So anyway, we were doing that. There's news, yeah.
Okay, cool.
And so that'll be excellent. All right. Well, Jordan, why don't you talk about the games you've been playing, man? Let's go that way.
Okay. I've been playing a few different things. There are some I play briefly, but the main things I will talk about are these, I guess. I've been playing Tales of Xillia, which is a lot of fun. It's a Tales game. So, it's an RPG about a group of people saving the world. Which is most RPGs, really. But
this one's supposed to be better than like maybe the last couple Tales games.
I don't know about better. I think Japan just, they get in moods, and it just might have been that this one got really popular. And, there is a sequel to it, and there's not a lot of those in the Tales franchise.
I think once or twice, right? Maybe there was with the, what was from the New World? What was that, a sequel? Symphonia, right?
Yeah, that's technically a spin-off sequel. It is not part of the main line. But Tales of Xillia 2 is part of the main line.
Interesting. So is this the first main line true sequel, or was Legends 2?
I think there's another
Legends
sequel.
2. Tales of Legends, or whatever.
I don't know on that. But it's fun. Each Tales game kind of has its own theme, which is usually in the Japanese title. And I'm pretty sure this one's Determination. And that really comes through in the plot. So far, things have happened. It's going interesting places with the plot that I would not expect. I'm currently in a subplot of the game where the main character has become paraplegic and doesn't have the use of their legs. So it's kind of odd. I wasn't really expecting that in a Tales game.
You're how many hours in? I know you're playing the female one, right?
Yeah, I'm about, I think, 13 or so hours in.
Okay.
It's fun. I like the characters for the most part. It's an RPG, so there is an annoying character, which could just be because I just met her.
Is that the puppet?
No, the puppet's fine. Okay. I know voice acting has never bothered me. I know some people get all up in arms over RPG voice acting, but I've never really cared.
Yeah.
So the English voice cast is doing a solid job. I like the characters, and I think the story's going well. The combat system's a lot of fun. It's a mix of the usual, active time battle. Well, not active time, but the real-time battle system with
right.
A linked system where you can team up with a partner to pull off more complicated arts. It has a Lilium orb that gives you a lot of control over how you level your characters up if you want, or you can set it to auto-level. You can... The shop system is really interesting because, in most RPGs, you'll go to a new town and each town has progressively better equipment.
Right, right.
But this system has it set up that as you're fighting monsters, you collect material from them, and then whenever you go to a shop, you can expand the shop by leveling them up and like giving them new material to work with.
That sounds inspired by Shin Megami.
Yeah, well, so as you're going through the game, you're leveling up the shops and you can get better armor as a result of your actual input as opposed to just some generic, oh, you're getting further into the game, so here goes better equipment.
Yeah.
So it's a cool system. It has a lot of cool systems that make it fun to play, and there's just a lot to it. And you can be as involved or uninvolved as you want. You can find dress-up items to put on your characters, and you can put them anywhere, which is kind of weird. There's a runny nose object you can have, and naturally it will go to the nose, but you can customize it so that it is coming off of their leg, which looks odd. But you can do it because it's Japan, and they don't really care what you're allowed to do in their games.
Non sequitur, like crazy. That's interesting.
So it's a very fun game. It's a solid RPG. You know, I don't know what it is, but ever since RPGs have switched mainly to portable being their main system, it's so hard to actually sit down and play an RPG on the TV because it's more of a commitment. Even with a quick save system where you can save anywhere, it's like, I don't want to sit here, and then you're waiting for it to load, and I don't know what it is. It's like any RPG on a system.
Well, I think and this might be specifically the way that I know I do it sometimes, and I know you do it a lot, Jordan, is, you know, you'll multitask with certain TV shows, and that's the opposite of this, where you'll be, you know, playing or doing your comic book art or playing like a game on a portable console while watching something, right?
Yeah.
And then also in reverse, sometimes you'll be playing a game that's like, you know, on your console and then listening maybe to a podcast in the background.
It's something like that, but I don't know. It's just something about it.
But, you know, so there's certain games, and I think RPGs are in that category where you really have to, even though sometimes you don't need to give it your undivided attention, sometimes you do. You know, you want to, whenever a skit comes up or a cutscene, you're going to want to give it your full attention and not be multitasking, unlike, say, a Mario game where you can play that all the time and
it inspires the attention, yeah. But it's a lot of fun, and I'm hoping to get through it soon. I've been playing it more lately. I kind of took a break because I was playing a lot more Borderlands 2. I don't really have anything new to say there except it's Borderlands 2, and I'm level 55 at this point.
It's starting to get to the point. I was over Jordan's house playing or watching him and Adam playing Borderlands 2. Real high level stuff. What are they? Clan monsters? What are they
called? Raid bosses.
Raid bosses. Really, really tough stuff. Much harder than anything that Borderlands 1 ever saw, obviously. But I mean, the level of you know, in how much you're into that game. I don't know if I've ever seen you into a game that much.
The last one was probably New Vegas.
Yeah.
I don't know. It helps having friends to play it with. And, you know, it's not like I've been playing it nonstop since I got it in November.
No, but you have days. I mean, we're talking days of your life here. It's intense.
I think I'm up to 6 hours of game time.
Six days of game time. Oh, my God.
Yeah, 6 hours wouldn't be that impressive. Adam's up to about 12, though.
Well, yeah. So. Take what you have and double it because he's got two characters.
Yeah. But it's fun, and fighting the raid boss is fun. I only have two achievements left in the whole game, and that's including all the DLC. So that's what I'm currently working towards.
That's insane.
One of the last two is the challenges, which is basically an achievement system inside of the game. So doing that takes a lot of time. But it's fun. Borderlands 2 is a lot of fun. And it still has DLC coming this fall. So it's never ending.
I can't believe that. What's coming still? I know they just raised the level cap and have those special like over-leveling abilities,
yeah, they just
right?
raised the level cap to 72. And I hadn't even reached the recent level cap of 61, so it's still a ways off.
How does the over-leveling work?
It's basically a way that allows people to keep getting higher level equipment without giving them enough skill points to max out all their skill trees. So once you hit 72, you can start overpowering the monsters up to level 80 so that you can get level 80 equipment for your people.
But you're not limited to only using level 72 equipment?
No, you're not limited to 72 equipment. The overpower stuff is, I mean, I'm pretty sure you have to be 72 to use it, but it's level 80 equipment.
So anything over, so once you're 72, you can use any equipment up to 80?
I would imagine so, yeah. Okay. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not there yet. It's a ways off.
Well, because I'm thinking maybe it's like you get like weapon training. So your leveling stops traditionally, but like the weapon leveling continues or something.
I don't know. It's the sort of thing where reviewers aren't really reviewing it. I think they'd have to have a level 72 character to review it. I'm sure they could get it easily enough, but it's just sort of an add-on bonus as opposed to a full DLC pack.
Yeah.
And the DLCs that are later this year, there are three Headhunter packs coming out before the end of the year.
What's that?
It's basically the addition of a couple new areas and a new raid boss for each pack. The first one is TK Baja's Bloody Harvest, which is a Halloween-themed jack-o'-lantern boss.
Sweet.
Named Jacques O'Lantern. So, I mean, you know, it's a new big time boss, and that's fun, and we'll probably get it. It's smaller than the first four DLC packs, but that's fine. Other than that, so that's Borderlands 2. I've also played Saints Row 4. I did not have the fondest feelings for Saints Row the Third because I thought it went too over the top.
By the way, I just want to pause you here a second. I've been listening to some other podcasts and reading reviews. People are in love with Saints Row 4.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of love, and I think it's deserved because somehow, even though it's in outer space fighting aliens in the Matrix with superpowers, it's more grounded than the third. And I know that might sound odd, but it refocuses on the characters. One of the third's biggest problems was that it wasn't as much about the character development. It was mainly, let's see what crazy shit we can throw at the viewer and, yeah, or the gamer. And it's like, oh, there are zombies now. Oh, now you're in the computer doing stuff Tron style. And there was no thematic flow to anything. But here it works. You get to know the characters. The characters that were just sort of introduced in the third, or the characters from two that were sort of shafted in the third, actually get their entire plot lines. You're going to rescue them. You get to do a loyalty mission with each character to give them superpowers.
What's up, Mass Effect 2 influence?
Yeah, you can also romance every member of your ship, including the robotic floating orb. So,
what?
I mean, it doesn't even take much effort. You basically just go up and say, hey, you want to have sex? And they're like, sure.
Wow, that's great.
Because that's Saints Row. But the characters feel focused. There's an actual plot. It's still not as good a story as Saints Row 2, but it is a story, which is more than I can say for the third, which was,
you know, I was listening to the Giant Bomb podcast, and that's especially, those guys are vehemently in love with that game, with Saints Row 4. And they say they didn't like 1 or even play much of 2, which I couldn't believe. I think 2 is the best, just like you do. You actually introduced me to that, Jordan. But they think like the series got amazing with the third, and that this is like the next level of awesomeness based on that. And but what they were saying is that the story in this game is amazingly good, which to me, when you were telling me about the conceit and like the idea behind the game, I was like, no way could that be a compelling story. But boy, everybody's saying it, so I'm sure you guys must be onto something. I mean, it's supposedly just super fun. They were also saying the mobility in the game is fantastic, as in, like, because you can, like, I guess with superpowers or whatever, dash in the air 3 or 4 different times, that you never have to touch the ground. You can bounce off walls and you can just get anywhere easily.
Yeah, you can do that. You don't have to touch the ground. There's an achievement for basically going across the map without touching the ground. You still wall run and stuff. But I don't know. This started life as a DLC for the third, and you can still sort of feel that. It's a fully fleshed out package in terms of what it offers. But there's a lot of vestigial gameplay elements to it now, because you can still fully level up every single thing you could in the third.
Like,
you can
homies.
Level up your homies and your vehicles and your cribs and what guns your homies hold, but you're never going to call your homies. You're never going to use a car unless the mission requires it, because you can fly. And even by the second speed upgrade, you're running faster than a car. So,
oh my God.
They basically just left everything in there and went, all right, let's build on top of this, as opposed to, you know, appropriately gutting the system to introduce new things. But, I mean, it's there if you want it. And you have so much money, you're like, all right, I guess I'll buy a homie upgrade now. And that's just sort of the flow of the game. But it's fun. I don't think they're ever going to go back to what made the second one so good. But it is a lot of fun. And, you know, it's sort of a love letter to the whole series, because since you're rescuing past gang members, you relive a lot of the things from the past games in a new style or a new gameplay type, and all the way back to the Saints Row 1. You get to reintroduce the big change to Shaundi that happened in the third. They actually have her get split in half into present-day Shaundi and Saints Row 2 Shaundi, who is called Fun Shaundi because she's still a, you know, potted-out, smoked-up weedster, as opposed to
like a glamour queen wearing Chanel.
Yes. And it's a bunch of weird stuff, but it works because that game just completely embraces it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It sounds amazing. I gotta play it.
Yeah. The last thing I've been playing is Gone Home, which been playing is kind of inaccurate because it's basically one playthrough experience of about 2.5 hours, maybe. And I was taking my time. I thought the 2 to 3 hour estimates would be like most review estimates, where they seem a little low. But no, this was pretty on the ball. Gone Home is the recent indie released game.
Indie darling.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of solid reviews. It's basically a house exploration game. You play as a girl, Katie, who returns from a year abroad to her family's new home. She has a mother, father, and a sister. And when she gets there, it's like 1 a.m. and no one's home. And she finds a note on the front door from her sister saying that she wishes she could be there to greet her, but she couldn't. It's impossible. Please don't try to find me. And from there, you just go into the house and start exploring the rooms. You find diary entries from your sister. You learn what has been going on with your mother and your father throughout the game. And that's the game. You're going through the house and you're learning the story of what the past year of your sister's life has been like and what's happened to her. And it's really, yeah, I mean, it is kind of mist-like, but it's very compelling and it's straightforward. It's a solid story and it has an emotional effect. Getting to know the characters works really well when you're just sort of finding scraps of their life. And it's set in the 90s to make it more believable that there would be all this writing and sort of correspondence around. I mean, it's still a little gamey, but it has to be. There's no real getting around that. But it's a lot of fun to just sort of get to know the place. I'm an adventure gamer anyway, and there's not really puzzles. And you can even miss stuff if you're just doing the main plot. But, you know, you're rewarded for looking through every desk drawer and picking up every piece of paper.
In a game where the whole point is these flavor texts and these things you pick up, I'd imagine you want to get as much of that as possible to flesh out the story, right?
Yeah, you do. And it's rewarding when you're finding stuff out. And even though you can go into the game like I did knowing that it is not a horror game, there are no jump scares, there's nothing intentionally scary in the game, you're still going to be creeped out the entire time you're playing because you're walking around an abandoned house in the middle of the night and there's TVs left on and there's creepy stuff in the basement. And it's an effective mood. It's an effective atmosphere. It's a great story, too. I didn't know exactly how it was going to end up until the actual ending happened. You figure stuff out as you're going along, but you're not sure if it's going to go one of two ways. And so you're compelled to keep going because you want to know what the ultimate ending of the game is. And it's a very effectively told story.
Is it an awesome, like when you find out what's really going on, is it feel like weird or does it feel like, wow, that makes total sense and that's awesome?
It makes sense. Everything builds in a very natural way. And I teared up a little at the end.
Wow. Three-hour, four-hour experience, right?
2 to 3, yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't outright bawling like I did with The Walking Dead, but I was connected to the characters, and I think that that is a huge accomplishment, and I look forward to seeing what other games the Fulbright company, I think that's who made it.
Isn't that like a the equivalent of a music supergroup, but for video games, like a gaming developer supergroup, consortium or whatever?
I don't know. It is their new system, and they really want to push this type of gameplay out into the world.
That's cool.
And it's really effective. So that is probably the most emotionally effective game I've played since our last episode.
Why don't you just run down the list of the other stuff you've been playing and give like a 30-second on them?
Okay, I played Super Hexagon. You play as a triangle trying not to get crushed by circling a hexagon. And it's fun. It shouldn't be. It's kind of stupid, and even when you're playing it, but you get better as you go. It's all about reflexes, but it is a fun game.
Awesome.
So you can pick it up for like $3 on Steam. It's not, and it's worth it.
It's also on iPhones and iPads and shit.
Yeah, I mean, I got about, I think I'm at 3.5 hours of game time in it, because you can just sort of bang it out while you're doing other stuff. I've also been playing Sly 4, or Thieves in Time.
Me too.
And it's a Sly game. I mean,
yeah.
It's a Sly game, and it's fun.
But you say that like you've played them all. You didn't really play the other ones, did you?
I played the first two.
Oh, okay.
I never got around to the third one.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I mean, I talk about the second more because I really loved the second
yeah.
one. And I know I've heard people say the third one is the best. But
well, they're different. I mean, from what I've been looking a lot into it because I actually picked up Sly 4 also. And, you know, what I've been reading, and I played a little bit of 1, I played a little bit of 3. But, you know, the first one is just like a straight-ahead platformer with stealth. The second one is like a character action game where you have where you start to be able to use all three characters, and it's a lot less like meticulous platforming and a lot more like interesting things to do and like variety. And then the third one is like a straight up action adventure romp with mad playable characters, and you know, you go everywhere, do everything, and sort of, you know, the ultimate version of that, you know, what game 2 was.
Yeah. Well, you want to just transition into what you've been playing then from there?
Yeah, sure. The reason I picked up Sly 4 actually is because I was playing Guacamelee. Now, I think you even recommended I picked that up, Jordan, and other people have been saying, like, that's a game, Rich, you'll love, because I love Metroidvanias.
I've never played it, so.
No, but you had said, like, I think we had said that I was talking about I want another Metroidvania to play because I want more, like, Shadow Complex, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. It has been getting reviews in that direction. So I guess so.
It's a great game. That game is so fun. Have you guys thought about picking it up at all, Guacamelee?
I've been thinking about it. Yeah, I mean, I like Metroidvania games, and so
yeah,
I'm doing that. Yeah,
yeah, it's really cool. I really dig it. It's got really tough platforming challenges, but never on the level of Super Meat Boy, where I'm suffering and miserable. You know, I know some people enjoy that. I don't. But I really enjoy this. And so I definitely would recommend Guacamelee. It's got, you know, the whole thing where there's like four color-coded power moves you have, and each one destroys a different kind of color-coded door where you get different, you know, behind which are, you know, different upgrades, just like Metroidvanias are. But it's very clean and clear, and it knows what it is. It knows it's humorous and funny. The combo system is really compelling. Every time you hit an enemy twice or three times, they get like a symbol over their head that means you can throw them or do a whole bunch of different slams. And obviously, because you're a wrestler, you know, what do you call those wrestlers? Lucha Libre wrestler. You can a luchador. You can like do pile drivers and different like punt kicks and just all kinds of like over the top moves. So every time you whittle an enemy down just with three hits, you can then do that. The enemy variety is fantastic. The move set that advances is great. And then once you're stringing together all the power moves, it's just really fun. You know what I mean? It's just a fun freaking game. So I played that and I was like, I think I'm gonna want more fun stuff to do on my Vita. So I got Sly 4 and then realized that game is way better in my opinion on my PS4. I mean PS3. And so like, and I read the reviews and they were like, it's better on PS3 and it looks better. But then again, you know, I haven't gone back to Vita to play it since, and it's not so complex that you really need the big screen. So I don't know. I'm still torn about what to play it on. What did you think? You've played both, Jordan.
I've mainly played the Vita cause I sold my PS3 version cause it was cross-buy for the same price.
Yeah.
Which was odd to me. Because it's like the Vita version was 20, the PS3 version was 20, and you get the Vita version. So it was a case of, I'm going to buy the PS3 version. Basically, why wouldn't I do that? But
yeah,
no, I enjoyed the Vita version. I did play it on the PS3 a little bit, but I just love the fact that the Vita lets you play games on both systems. And
that's
that
so
you
cool.
can have a chance to switch off. And it's not a the cross-save system works really well. It's like upload to cloud, download from cloud,
yeah.
Bam, you're done.
It is really cool. And I'll tell you on that same note, and this is something that Tim and I both played, Dragon's Crown. And you can play that, but unbelievably it's cross save but not cross buy.
Yeah, that's so weird with it.
Isn't
you know?
That lame?
Yeah.
But what did you think, Tim?
What, a Dragon's Crown?
Yeah, we played it for about an hour or two.
I liked it. It had a very solid, you know, gameplay with it. It's something I feel I could get into for a long time with it.
Yeah.
But it's something to probably be a lot more fun with more people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Although I wonder on the same screen if having four people going crazy would maybe get distracting. I don't know.
I mean, you got the computer controlled characters anyway, so I figure it wouldn't be that different.
I guess that's true. But you know, they don't spam their special attacks as much as people would. I don't know. I just know that in some games, you know, when everybody's doing their special moves all at the same time, it becomes a clusterfuck. But I mean, it's a fun game. It's got a lot of different classes. We didn't get to really put it through its paces.
Yeah.
And try out all the different characters. But I think we each chose a class.
I was the dwarf.
Right, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the level ups, I think I was the Amazon.
Yeah.
Who's unbelievably over-sexualized and ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah, the whole game is.
But, you know, whatever. At least it's not Killer is Dead levels. Have you heard about this?
Uh-uh.
So Killer is Dead has this gigolo mode or, like, whatever they call them, like, gigolo missions or something. So you go and you, like, basically sit next to a geisha girl. And you, like, when she's looking the other way, you try to cop a feel and shit. I'm not even kidding. And then to figure out what she likes, you put on special, like, Gretchen's glasses or something. They're X-ray specs. And when you put them on, you can see your beauty's underwear. And by seeing that, you can judge what presents they might like. I swear, I shit you not.
Wow.
It's that egregious.
People wonder why, you know, games get blamed as being masculine, too masculine, you know.
It's egregious. That's
Grasshopper Manufacture for you, though. That's sort
yeah?
of their style. I mean, Lollipop Chainsaw was entirely about playing a sexy cheerleader who you could dress up in sexier, scantier outfits. So,
and it literally is a nonstop 6 to 7 hour upskirt shot.
Yeah.
And she actually, if you pan the camera down to try to look up her skirt, she says, "Hey, stop," or like, "You pervert," and she like puts her hands. But it doesn't matter because you're getting a full flash anyway. Anyway. But the thing, you know, the thing about, you know, Suda 51 is I'm very hit and miss on his games. Like, I liked the No More Heroes games to some extent. And then I really love Shadows of the Damned, as you know. which I didn't think I was going to, but I love that game. And then I really didn't like Lollipop. And now this one's out, and it's getting like fives and sixes. And they just say it's broken, it's got screen tearing, it's pretty short, it's just a very, you know, average hack and slash fighting game, and that you'd just be better served with Devil May Cry. And even Revengeance, which I think is a piece of ass, but apparently, like, people think that had a deep and compelling fighting system. I think those people are crazy, but hey. So anyway, back to what I was talking about, which was, which game was I just on, guys?
Dragon's Crown.
Dragon's Crown. Yeah. So Dragon's Crown's fun, and you know, over-sexualized, but, you know, whatever. You know what you're getting into with that. At least it's an equal opportunity offender, right? The guys have ridiculously...
No, it's not.
No, the guys have these ridiculously overblown pecs and arms and...
Yeah, that's not what women fantasize about. Women fantasize about Gambit or Nightwing, you know? They don't fantasize about Kratos. I mean, some women are going to. Someone fantasizes about everybody. But if you put all three in a lineup, most women are going to say Gambit and Nightwing. I mean, they were voted the sexiest men by women
really?
In comic books. Yes, and in video games.
Oh, that's funny. I was wondering where you were getting that from.
They go more for a swimmer, apparently, than they do for the bodybuilder, which you know, you can probably understand.
Well, maybe it's because the bodybuilder is a little bit, like, I don't know, exaggerated and a little weird looking.
It's you don't need that much muscle most of the time.
Yeah,
and, I mean, I could see, like, a need – I mean – if you're in a tribal setting, maybe you'd want something like that. But I think endurance is usually the thing that's attracted more than just your body strength.
And virility.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, this is not true for everybody with it, but it seems to be the trend.
Interesting. I didn't see that survey, but that's cool. I also got a chance to play Assassin's Creed Revelations and finished it, and now I'm about a third of the way through 3. The big surprise at the end of what's-his-name section, I'm not going to reveal it here, but... What is his name?
Haytham?
Yeah. That big surprise, I was blown away by it. Jordan said he saw it coming. I didn't.
I didn't see it coming. I thought that was one of the better parts of the game.
I loved that. And I didn't hate Haytham, but you guys did.
I didn't hate Haytham. He was my favorite character in
it. Yeah, I love Haytham. You didn't dig him, though, Jordan.
Well, what it was I didn't like Haytham at first because I think he's a huge tool bag throughout the beginning of the game.
Oh, I love that.
Tim likes that he's kind of a dick, if I remember correctly.
I like that aristocratic, like Ponce attitude. I don't know. I dig that British vibe.
I liked him by the end of the game because he had a personality, and he finally gave the Templars a not completely psychotic face. He wasn't the Borgias, so thank God for that, I guess.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting how they evened it out a little bit. You know, the Templars are about, I mean, instead of just being evil like they've been portrayed in all the other games, they're just about order as opposed to free will, you know? And so that's sort of what they're trying to express with that, is that they think that people need to be controlled and kept in line, but they think that's the means to, you know, a good future, not that they want to destroy the world per se, you know?
I mean, they develop that a lot throughout the rest of the game when you get farther in with it. But I think it's kind of interesting, actually. I mean, because I think Jordan just kind of spoiled it a little bit.
Yeah, he kind of did. It's fine.
But anyway, it's a year-old game, so, you know.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. What I think is interesting, though, is like when you finally do play as an Assassin's, you see the Templars in a negative light, but while you're playing the Templars, you see them in the positive light.
Yeah.
And it's almost like because you're in that character's eyes, you're seeing the world through how they would.
Yeah.
And so the same action, you know, they see it as though, oh, it's a subtle, quick killing, and, you know, you're saying, well, you see the other person that are stabbing them and hacking them to pieces.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of cool with it.
That's true. And you know what I really liked was the fact that as I was putting together my team of Templars, not knowing they were Templars, I was like, boy, this guy's kind of not that good a dude. And then this other dude was like, wow, this doctor guy, he's kind of a creep. And, yeah. Oh, wow, look at this hired gun. He's like a, you know, he looks like he's from a Guy Ritchie movie and but the worst asshole, one of the henchmen, you know. Mm-hmm. And then at the end when it all came full circle and he puts the ring on and you see the Templar logo on it and it's just like, bam. I was like, wow. It validated what I'd been feeling, mm-hmm. but not knowing, you know.
Yeah. Well, I always think like. It surprised me the most just because I thought most of the time with the Assassin's Creeds, they usually get very sketchy people. Or they try to make people who are sketchy and then make them not sketchy like Machiavelli. I kind of didn't like what they did in Brotherhood there, where it's just like, oh, he's not that bad. And I hate how they always describe it. It's like he learned all of his techniques from Ezio. And I'm like, really? I just kind of jumped around and stabbed people, you know?
Yeah.
Some very different techniques. But yeah, I dig that part of the game. That was probably my favorite part.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the game. I went into that game especially because we talked about it, and it definitely came up on our biggest disappointments of last year and all of that list. I don't know if necessarily you'd agree with that, Tim, but
no, I mean,
Jordan picked it for that.
I was not amazed by the game, but I thought it was worth playing, and you know, it was fun.
But I talked to Jordan a lot about it too, and so I really had very lowered expectations going in, so I'm loving it. Mm-hmm. But you know, we'll see.
My biggest complaints is just how glitchy it was. You know,
which has been largely fixed.
Yeah, and so I would like to play it this time for the first time. You know.
Yeah, I would say going in with lowered expectations does help. I think Assassin's Creed 3 had been built up so much by that point.
The new reinvention of the series, you know.
And it's really just it's a lot more of the same. I didn't really like the Frontier that much just because it's a lot of running around in trees.
Yeah.
But that's sort of what helped me with Saints Row 4, because I think, you know, I was going into that game going, they've killed the series. I don't even care. But I got it, and it actually surprised me. So that's always a good thing, to go in with lowered expectations.
I think in life that's good. You know, if you go on, like, let's say you go on a blind date and you're expecting a knockout girl. Well, even if you get a knockout, you're going to be like, okay, great. But if you go into a blind date and like somebody's like, well, I don't know if you're going to like this girl, but she's really sweet, and you get there and she's actually really cute too, you're going to think you hit the jackpot. At least I would. Maybe that's chauvinistic, whatever. But I just think that lowered expectations in general in life are a good thing. Go in expecting, you know, not the best, and you'll be really happily surprised. I don't know. I'm still figuring out my mentality and the way I want to face the world, even at my age. So those are my musings. Anyway, let's see. Anything else I played? I finished Last of Us. If we have time, we're going to talk about that at the end of this podcast, or maybe we'll put it on the next. I talk a lot, and it looks like we're going over a little, but we'll get to talking about Last of Us. I tried Out of the Shadows, that Ninja Turtles new game. It's all right. I've read in reviews that it's a little, like, the combat's a little slow, and I thought that it was. I want a fast, I think it should be faster action in a game like that, so it's a little clunky in that regard. I played some Far Cry 3. I love it so far, but I've just been playing so many things I haven't gotten to give it a lot of time. But I can see why you loved it, Jordan. It's really killer. I just started Dream Team. I'm super excited for that. I wanted to finish Luigi's Mansion first, which I just did. And the end of that is hard, man. Did you think so, Jordan?
I thought it was a healthy difficulty, yeah.
Yeah, that the last mansion when you have to kill ghosts on a timer, man, I was really sweating that part. That was tough. And then I'd say the last thing that I played was Mini Ninjas, and this is just a weird purchase, but I've been wanting to play that game forever. People said it's a little Zelda-like, but toned down, and you know, it's a little kid-friendly, but also really fun. And I just was really looking forward to playing that game and just seeing what it was about. What's up? Level's funny? Oh, okay. Anyway, I was just I was really looking forward to trying Mini Ninjas. I always thought it was a game I wanted to play, but it was always like it never went down in price for some odd reason. And then finally I noticed that it was like $17. There was a buy two, get one deal at GameStop. So I hit that up, and it's really fun. It's a fun game. Have you guys thought about playing that?
Not really. I might one day.
Me neither. I'd never even heard of it, honestly.
Yeah. No, it's just a game that like developer IO Interactive was thinking, why don't we make a game that we can play with our kids? I think they made like Kane and Lynch and shit, you know, in the past. And they were like, let's make, Hitman. I played a little Hitman. What's the new one? Absolution. And it's pretty fun, too. So I played a lot of stuff. But anyway, Tim, what have you been playing, man?
I've really just been playing three games, mostly. I've been playing a lot of Civilization V, just because I kind of got into the groove of it. And it's one of those things where you just kind of play and you realize, oh, I've been playing for about 8 hours, and the sun's coming up.
Yeah.
And so you kind of hit that mood with it. I ended up putting about over 100 hours in it over the past month and a half or so.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. Like, you got to kind of like Civ games to appreciate what's good about Civ 5.
Wait, how many hours did you say? I was looking at the mixer. How many?
About 100.
Oh, come on.
No.
Wow.
Each map of Civilization is going to take you about 8 hours, even if you're on quick mode.
How many maps are there total?
Well, I mean, it's randomly generated, so you're starting from square one every single time. Yeah. I mean, there's campaigns, but really, most of the time, you're just doing the random stuff with it.
Wow. That's cool. So it's infinitely playable.
Yeah, it's... After a while, you kind of feel like you're just done with it. But it's... There's such small things in the game that just change so drastically as you're playing throughout that you don't realize it when you're just starting. It's like, oh, this person gets plus one culture per turn. This person gets plus one coins. You know, what difference does that make?
Right.
But then when you're playing where there's like 500 turns, you're looking at the end game with it, and it's like, oh, because I had this, I could do this first. Mm-hmm. Because I had that, I could do that first. And it just changes the entire play style from the small differences. And I just really enjoy it. And there's just tons of really good mods for it. Like, I played a pretty decent Game of Thrones mod for it.
Really?
Where everyone is revamped as, like, the houses. And then all the characters revamped, too, with
it. Was it awesome?
It was okay. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I wouldn't pay money for it, but as a free downloadable thing, it was pretty sweet.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there was ones, too, where they, like, added in new civilizations and adding in new wonders.
But
there
all
was
you
one...
see, it's not like you see the characters, like, drawn. It's just their names are changed to that, right?
I mean, you don't see the individual characters with it, but it's more of, like, you are playing as Robb Stark, and your kingdom is the North.
Oh.
And so then, you know...
And the map is accurate and all that?
The maps are usually, you know, entire worlds and randomly generated, but they usually have, if you're playing Egypt, the place that you start will have more deserts around. So they'll generate that sort of stuff with it. And so if you're playing the North, there's a little more tundra. And then, you know, their people do well in the tundra, of course.
I see, right.
But then you can get, like, dire wolves, which are sort of advanced scouts, and so they get little upgrades to all the stuff with it. And you get, you know, the Kranig men, who they don't really talk about in the show, but they talk about a lot in the book. And so you just get these little variations, and it's fun to do with it. Daenerys was a little overpowered, though, in that.
Interesting.
And so,
maybe that's prophetic.
I don't know, but it's just like every single time I played it, when she was the AI, I was like, I was kicking, because usually, you know, there's like 12 civilizations, but you start off as a small continent, and you don't see half of them, because half of them are going to be destroyed as the other AI is playing with it. And then eventually it's like you arrive on the new continent, and it's like, wow, who are all these new people? And every single time Daenerys was on another continent, and by the time I got there, she was the only one on the continent still. And it's like, wow, that's pretty crazy.
Wow.
But yeah, I just played a ton of Civ 5 lately. You know, okay. It's one of the things you just stay up all night doing.
Anything else?
I played the Undiscovered Swan, finally.
Oh, okay, awesome. Let's hear it.
I liked it. Okay. It was, I mean, it's short.
What's the gameplay on that?
It's the one where you're throwing the paint. It's like the world starts – it's like every section's got sort of a different theme. Like the first section is completely white and you're throwing black paint and you don't really get to see anything until you throw black paint onto it. And so it gets a cool graphical effect. But then that only lasts like a good maybe 15 minutes and then you're around to a town and you're still throwing the black paint, but it's not nearly as, you know, profound as it was before.
Right.
But then they're talking about stories and like, you know, there's this crazy land where the king, you know, is a painter. And so as he's talking about what the king's doing painting, the world's getting that same sort of stuff with it.
Yeah.
And the whole story is just sort of about like a kid whose mom is dead, who was an artist. And so she had this one picture and it's like him, you know, making up a story for why she's gone.
Huh.
And so it's nice in that way. It's a little heartfelt, but I wasn't too impressed with the gameplay of it.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean, which is a big problem because those games are very reliant on their gameplay.
Yeah, it's like the most fun parts of it I thought were the beginning parts. I mean, they adapt it later. Like later you get water and so you can throw water and, you know, plants will grow. And so you'll make vines to climb up walls and stuff like that. But you're still just throwing stuff around random things with it. The gameplay wasn't very compelling to me as much as the graphical stuff was. And the graphical stuff I thought was the strongest in the beginning with it. So
okay.
It was worth playing, you know. It's only like $10, so yeah. Worth getting.
Very cool.
Third thing I've been playing a lot of lately is Disgaea 4.
Awesome. Tell me about this. Now, wait, is that the one that was like the first PS3 Disgaea?
No, it's the second PS3 one, but it's the first like real PS3 one, if you want to say something like
that.
Wait, what is it? Because the Disgaea 3 came out right as the PlayStation 3 launched, and you can tell it was actually going to be developed for the PlayStation 2 with, you know, minor adjustments.
I see.
But this one you could tell, you know, they got pretty solid, you know, anime style graphics with it that you use a lot of more vibrant colors than the other ones do and stuff. But it's a Disgaea game. They're really not that different, honestly. Like all of them, if you played one, you've pretty much played the others.
Yeah, and I've heard that from you too, Jordan.
It's a situation to where, like, you know, I don't know. I really remember loving the first Disgaea, but all the ones after that, it's like this is okay, but I don't love it nearly as much because it's just I don't find the comedy as funny as it is anymore.
Yeah,
and it's like the first time they did the joke, it was like, oh, it's a joke, but then they're like, oh wow, we got to develop an entire series, so now. We're going to call everybody who's a little weak the mid-boss enemy. It's going to be a title for the demons. Huh? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, and this person, oh, they're real strong, so they're the final bosses. Well, that person wants to be a final boss. Huh? Huh? You get the joke?
Yeah.
And it's just real bad in that aspect.
Yeah, I agree. The series has kind of gone down that road. I actually really like the second one. Mainly, I don't know. I really like that cast of characters, but I do agree that since the first one, it's kind of become less about solid map design as it has the jokiness. I do think Disgaea 4 has had better map design than some of the more recent ones. I don't know why that is. And I never finished it, so I don't know what that says. But
it says it's an RPG.
Yeah.
Nobody finishes any RPGs.
I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it, though. It's another Troy Baker game, because I know he voices one of the main characters.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's one of those two. I forget. It's been a while. I remember seeing he was in that. I think he's uncredited, too. So, but I don't know. This is a random rambling aside. It's a good year for Troy Baker. That was another thing I was going to mention about Saints Row 4 really quick that was funny is they have the usual voice options, which are the three male voices and the three female voices and the zombie voice. And there's also Nolan North voice, as voiced by Nolan North, is an option.
That's so crazy. How cool is that?
And I find it funny because give it another 2 years, then that'll be Troy Baker voice, who's already a Saints Row voice, but he's had a damn good year.
Is he the regular voice one?
He's voice one, yeah.
Wow.
Imagine I don't really think the hierarchy matters there.
That's
but.
Pretty much an all-star cast in that, I mean, think about not that's the wrong word, but that's pretty awesome to have Troy Baker or Nolan North as two options to voice your whole game. I mean, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, I mean, Nolan North does, I mean, I don't think he's ever going to turn down a voice role at this point. It doesn't seem like it because he's in everything still.
Yeah.
But
But
we'll be talking, if we do get to the last, we'll be talking about him actually giving a really good performance.
Yeah, yeah, he definitely did.
So, anyway.
Awesome. All right. Back to you, Tim. Did you have anything else you want to say about this Gaia?
Not really. I mean, like, this Gaia games are more about massive grinding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I mean, you can get up to level 9,999, and then you can take your character back up down to level 1 so that when you grow now, your level growths are going to be bigger. And that's kind of actually necessary to do. Because what it does is you can...
How fast do you level? Do you get, like, multiple levels per level?
Yeah, you can do a board and go from level 1 to level 400.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's going to be, like, later in the game with it. But, like, you reincarnate is what they do. And so your character drops down to 1, and then all your growths change.
I see.
And you get to
so much better.
Yeah. And so they get a lot better, depending on how many levels you
it's
had beforehand.
It's kind of like prestiging in Call of Duty.
Yeah, it is actually very similar to that in aspect. Except you're going to do it more often. Like, most of the time... Like, people go crazy and they're grinding with it, but most people reincarnate, like, you know, 7 or 8 times before they finish the game with it.
Wow.
And have, like, maybe, like, you know, 15,000 levels stored up. And it's just, there's a lot of post-game stuff to do that I may enjoy doing, but, like, I don't know, maybe 65% of the way through the main storyline. It's kind of boring, but, you know, it's an RPG. It's pretty fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
There's one thing I want to... Go ahead, Jordan.
I was going to say, it's also a Disgaea at this point is you can pretty much recruit every Nippon Ichi character in a Disgaea game after you finish the game. I know with 3 it was DLC. I don't know if 4 actually went that same route.
4's got largely that same route. They sort of divided it up into half. Like, you know, characters who you see more directly connected to the storyline and, like, their biggest people, those ones you can get. Like, you can get Laharl, you can get Etna, you can get, you know, Axel. And so you get them. But then, you know, there are other, you know, more obscure characters like Ash and Morona, I think, are DLC. And then a bunch of other people. Like, there's characters who are in Japanese games that were never released here. And you're like, wow, they're making jokes that, you know, even if I wanted to know what they were, I would have no access here.
Yeah.
They even have a joke DLC character. Or I don't know if she's DLC. I know she's in them. Who is from a still in development, and I put that in quotes, Nippon Ichi game, and her whole thing is that she is a cameo character in every game whose sole existence is being a cameo character in Disgaea games, basically. So.
Hey, one thing I wanted to talk about with you, Tim. Have you seen Dive Kick?
I have seen Dive Kick.
Why are you not all about it?
Because I would be horrible at that game.
Oh, really? It looks like it's so up your alley. Like, it's all like inside jokes for people like you who are, you know, have played a lot of competitive.
Yeah, but I'm not any good at fighting games.
Well, it doesn't matter. You play it against the computer.
But that's what Dive Kick's all about, though, because the whole thing is there's two moves, dive and kick.
Yeah.
And that's
and dive is
or really jump and dive kick. That's the only one with it. But
so
it's,
they call it dive and kick, but you're right. It is jump and dive kick.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about pacing because, you know, certain characters have different angles that they can dive kick at, and, you know, certain people have certain jumping speeds. And so it's more about, like, complete spacing, and it's... You know, in a real fighting game,
it is stupid as hell. Like, when you watch, like, a playback of it, it looks terrible. It's so boring to watch, but...
It's one of those things where, like, if I think I was in a real fight, I think playing that game would probably actually help more. Because in that one, it's like, in a real fight, you know, if you find someone's weakness and you punch them in the throat, it's over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If they lower their guard down, they're gone. And so, you know, in most fighting games, there's all the crazy shit going on. But that one is just like, okay, I need to hit them first, or they're going to hit me first, and whoever hits first is basically going to win. Yeah. And so it's you're keeping all that consideration. It is considering different angles and different speeds and how to adjust for those sort of things with it.
Yeah.
I think that's cool, but it's a game where I'm just like, I would be horrible at this. I do not have the patience. And, you know, that's the part where when it gets to fighting games, it's just like, I don't enjoy doing that. Yeah. I enjoy crazy fireballs.
I'm surprised at that. Okay. Well, anyway, I guess that's it. That's all you've been playing, man?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
that's a good amount.
Yeah.
Especially add in Civilization V.
Yeah, I mean, played a shit ton of
the large chunk of it. Yeah. Awesome.
Egyptians rule.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to move on to news. But before we do, let's take a quick break. Make sure everything's recording properly with the new equipment. And we're back. Jordan, take us away with the news, my friend.
So news, quite a few things have happened. Some of them will probably have more to say about them than others.
Okay.
But let's start with Kickstarter.
Oh, wait, by the way, you also have the date release dates for the consoles, right?
I did not write those down because they're still just in November, so...
Oh, okay. Well, it's the 15th and the 22nd. That's the first big news, is that PlayStation is actually coming out a week early.
Okay.
Okay, you don't think that's significant?
I mean...
With the battle of the PlayStation 4 versus the Xbox One, Xbox is November 22nd and PlayStation is the 15th. People are saying, you know, with PlayStation already having this big head start, that maybe that might be insurmountable. What do you think?
I think a week is not as the same as a year. And I don't think ultimately they are going for the same audience at this point, clearly. So, I mean, I don't know.
Actually, what I think was more interesting news about that is they said the Xbox 360 was going to be supported until 2016.
Yeah, I heard that too.
And I wonder, I mean, how much supported is actually supported. But I wouldn't be surprised if they're just sort of like, you know, people really dislike the Xbox One right now. We need to do the least, but let's try to get credibility back through the Xbox 360 and sort of slowly go up with the Xbox One with it. I was just wondered, what do you guys think on that? Do you think that's like a viable strategy that they're doing, or do you think that's just, you know,
them
talking out of their ass for supporting?
In the past, it's been like you got 18 months roughly.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're talking, what, 2.5 years basically?
Yeah.
3 years. I mean, I think it makes sense, especially with how prohibitively expensive, and I know there's inflation and you can adjust for that, but I mean, both consoles are pretty expensive, and you know, a lot of gamers, you know, it's just in the last 2 or 3 years that Xbox 360 and PlayStation 4 have gotten ubiquitous, mm-hmm. where like if somebody says they have a console, it's one of those, because a lot of times you can get them used or whatever, and you can pay $100 to $150 and get a console pretty much.
Yeah.
And that's the point of critical mass, where everybody's got a freaking Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 3, and everybody's partying.
Most people got both now.
Right, right. And the last thing people want to do, the companies want to do, is cut off their software, especially their first-party software sales, by not offering Xbox 360, not catering to that amazingly large install base. I mean, this console generation has been, what, arguably longer than any before it, or at least as long.
I don't think that's arguable. It has been much longer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so because of this console cycle being so long, I mean, there's so many consoles out there. There's so many people. Like, you know, Xbox 360, it's just a given. And PlayStation 3, it's just in the consciousness. So, I mean, to not cater to them as long as possible as well, especially with just how much – I don't know. I just think that the costs are so high associated with 1 and 4.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Jordan, you got any idea on that or anything with that?
Not really. I don't know. I can understand it. And I think them supporting – I mean, if they dropped them, it would be a bad move. So I'm not surprised, really, that they're supporting them. Maybe that long is kind of a surprise. But I don't know. As long as developers are making games for it, I don't know that they would stop. I mean, again, you had a lot of Japanese developers keep making PS2 games for 5 years after the PS2.
Yeah, there's still PSP games coming out, weirdly.
It's a popular system over there.
Yeah, no, so, I know this.
I mean, I know that they just announced Trails in the Sky Second Chapter is getting an American release on
PSP?
The PSP.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can download it for Vita, so it doesn't really matter at this point. And maybe that's the point.
That does help. You know, but therein lies the key difference in that Xbox One and PlayStation 4 are both not backwards compatible, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you have a big difference in that, you know, you're going to have to keep – I mean, I'm going to have 4 consoles on display. Eventually, you know, when I get the money for both new consoles. So, I mean, that's pretty serious as far as real estate in your entertainment unit, right? If you want to play every game that comes out, and, you know, we're pretty hardcore.
I don't know. I mean, did they say they're supporting it as in exclusives or just supporting it? Because
no, I think they mean they're going to continue to put games out.
Yeah, it just said supported. And that's why I was like, you know, supported. It was a longer time period than the other ones with it. And that's why I was wondering if there's actually more bite in this than it is just, you know, like, well, yeah, we're going to support it until it teeters off.
It certainly means, I'll tell you one thing, it certainly means. If they're going to say they're going to support it until 2016, it certainly means that you're going to be able to get online onto PlayStation Network and Xbox Live from those consoles with supported updates from now till then.
Yeah.
I think that's a given. It may or may not include games like Call of Duty servers. It may or may not include like DLC for games.
Mm-hmm.
But it may or may not include, you know, and this is another important question I think that I'd be interested to hear your guys' take on, is the question of, you know, games coming out on multiple consoles. Now, when we had the last switch from, let's say, Xbox to Xbox 360, Madden NFL for Xbox was way better that year than the 360 version because they didn't have enough time to make the 360 version feature rich. So literally it had like one third the options. It had better graphics, but that was it. Every other way, the Xbox version was more complete.
When the 360 first came out, it got a pretty bad launch. I mean, a lot of people really hated on it. They were saying it's the next Dreamcast and such.
Sure. But especially, you know, But the thing is that, you know, now there's a lot. And for example, Call of Duty, you know, it's coming out about like 2 or 3 weeks before the console's launch, depending on which console you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're offering is a $10 upgrade. So if you buy Ghosts on either, you know, PlayStation 3 or Xbox 360, you can pay $10 and upgrade to the next gen version. And all of your saves and prestiging or leveling moves over. So that's an interesting thing. I don't know if Assassin's Creed's going to do that, Watch Dogs is going to do that, and all the other titles. But I do know that a lot of these titles are coming out for both generations of consoles. So that's going to be interesting. A lot of people are wondering, you know, like, for example, are you guys going to buy Assassin's Creed 4 on Xbox 360, or are you going to buy it on the new system? And what about Watch Dogs? Are you going to pick that up on this gen or next gen?
I'm probably not going to pick up a new system, at least for a year. So I'd probably pick it up for the current one.
Okay.
Yeah, even if I get an X, if I do get an Xbox One, I will start buying games for it. If I don't, I will, like, and even with Assassin's Creed, it's coming out before the Xbox One, so I'll probably play it on Xbox 360. I don't really see the point in waiting those games.
I want to see the side-by-side, you know, because it really comes down to what's the difference going to be. And that also, you know, begs the question, what's the difference going to be, like, what can we expect overall, like, from next year's crop of games versus this year's, as far as graphical improvements, capabilities. I know you say you don't care about graphics, and I believe you, but I'm just wondering what the difference will be quantitatively.
Well, the graphics will be slightly nicer, and no one will really notice, and there won't be any cool features because gamers will bitch about them, and then they will get taken out of the system.
Oh, come on. I don't think that'll go on forever.
Okay.
I heard of a thing. I didn't get time to like read it too thoroughly, but didn't EA say something about how they were going to almost go purely downloadable now, and like everything was going to have free to play stuff with it? Does anybody remember hearing something like that?
No.
Let me see if I can find that real quick, because I remember reading something on that.
Interesting. Well, okay. In the meantime, Jordan, why don't you hit us with your news story? Sorry, I kind of hijacked you.
You did, but that's okay. It's a good topic. I hadn't heard that, so it was worth, or the support thing. Anyway, Kickstarter has got two pretty big games. I'll start with what is inarguably the smaller one, even though it's a cool one. Way Forward has launched a Kickstarter for Shantae Half Genie Hero.
Awesome.
A full HD new game in the series.
I love full HD platformers.
Which is kind of interesting because the new Shantae and the Pirate's Curse for 3DS isn't even out yet. So they're already hard at work on their next game.
When is that coming, do you know?
Later this year, I believe.
And that was funded internally or whatever.
Yeah. I just know they wanted to make it. I haven't seen a whole lot on
it. Is that a full game?
The Pirate's Curse?
Yeah,
it's a 3DSware game, I guess.
Oh, where? Oh, that's what I meant. Is it going to be a box copy, or is it going to be DLC only or downloadable only?
I think downloadable only.
Just like Risky's Revenge?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure on that. I just had noticed when I was learning about Half Genie Hero that they had Pirate's Curse in development already. So there is that. If you're a Shantae fan, which I know isn't necessarily the most popular gaming figure, but she certainly had a resurgence.
She's got a huge grassroots following. People, you know, the problem is that game came out, you know the history of that, Jordan, is that the game came out, I'm just saying this for people who don't maybe know, is that, you know, the original Shantae came out on Game Boy Color. It was in development for a little while at Way Forward, and it came out on Game Boy Color right, like, maybe a few months after the launch, which kind of parallels what we were just talking about system overlaps. But when the Game Boy Advance was launched, it was a color game, and it was optimized for Advance. I think, like, you could get it would look a little better on an Advance, but it was basically obsolete. Nobody wanted to buy Game Boy Color games for Advance at that point. So that game got lost in the shuffle. There are almost no copies. I had a copy and played it, and then I actually was able to sell it on Craigslist for like $150.
That's cool.
Not Craigslist, eBay. I mean, it goes for that much. Now, finally, they have a port of it available to download on I believe, DS.
Yeah.
On 3DS.
I've still meant to go play that at some point.
It's a solid platformer. I mean, it's really cool. You whip your hair. It's pretty straight. But then Risky's Revenge came out. The game's not full featured. Like, it's kind of like a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 hour game. It's a lot shorter than a full than the full Shantae games are, but it's really fun. And now we have some more games coming out. I'm excited. It's a good platformer series. WayForward always dominates, right?
Yeah, and speaking of much-loved platformer games,
dun-dun.
Keiji Inafune is kickstarting a new Mega Man game called Mighty No. 9. And, yeah, I mean, it's a Mega Man game. If you've seen it at all, you play as a robot who is the ninth in his series. The first six, though now thanks to Scratch Girls, eight robots have gone mad, and you have to go fight them in their uniquely themed stages, absorbing their power in whatever order you choose to go and, you know, fight some bad guy who has caused this. And the robot's name is Beck, and his robot sister is Call. So you've got Beck and Call as the characters.
Instead of Roll and
Rock and Roll,
rock
yes.
And roll, yeah.
And he's blue. And it's a Mega Man game. I don't really, I mean, you know.
But it's cool, but he can't because he's not a Capcom anymore.
I'm just wondering if the villain's name is going to be like Dr. Sneaky or something like that.
Dr. Wary.
It's like Dr. Wary and Sneaky. Dr. Cunning.
Dr. Stealth. It'll be something cool like that. But anyway, that game is like getting muchos Kickstarter dineros, correct?
Yes. It had a goal of 900,000. It broke that in the first 2 days. And it currently sits at 1.8 million.
I heard it needs 2.5 to do something.
Yeah. Now, this was the odd part. They're making it for PC with that, with the console release as a 2.5 million stretch goal, which, I don't know. It seems like that should have been sooner because the stretch goal before that was the documentary about the making of the game, and it seems like I don't really – like I played Mega Man versus or Mega Man Cross Street Fighter on console – on PC, and it wasn't really that much fun to control. So I would – I mean, I'm sure it's going to get to a console release. I think it'll be more fun as a console game.
Are you saying that you think the console should have been like the 1.8 million and the documentary should have been the 2.5?
I think console should have been the goal –
I agree with you, but you need it to be around that price because that's how much it costs to develop on a console because of licensing fees. So whether they made the documentary a goal or not, I think that all that's doing is just making it more spread out, like giving them more rewards along the way. But I think before 2.5 million, you're nowhere.
I don't know. I think, though, it does raise a question that some people have been having, and it's a question that comes up with Kickstarter a lot ever since Tim Schafer. Did he really need to go to Kickstarter for this? Was there no console that would have wanted this game?
Yeah.
And I question that. Nintendo loved Mega Man.
It's one of those things, too, that if you went to big developers like, look, I just need $1 million to make a game. $1 million, I'll make a new Mega Man for you. I mean, they're going to say no to you? That's such low for development costs.
Maybe not, but I think that what he doesn't – a lot of times people don't want to be at the beck and call of any company. They do beck and call, right? Oh, wow, that is They don't want to be. They don't want to be at the knee, standing at the knees, or kneeling down in front of, you know, the overlords of industry and saying, you know, you guys get to have approval at the, you know, they have to sign away a lot of shit to get investment money.
I'm not in game development, so I don't know how bad it would be, but I would think if you had a really big fan backing and you just needed $1 million, if you were like, I want to do this independently, you fund me, that's it. And if they didn't do it, be like, all right, I'm going to go to somebody else.
Well, that's what Titanfall did. I mean, that's what they're saying about Titanfall. They said, we refuse to do anything that less than having control.
And that's not like a $1 million franchise, though. I mean, that's a huge one with it or something like that. But if it's $1 million, that's chump change for somebody who spends, you know.
Platformer development.
Yeah, and it's just sort of a thing where it's just like somebody's going to take that, you know. I don't understand why it's always a Kickstarter with it.
I don't know. I mean, because it's one guaranteed way also to have guaranteed fan base built in.
Yeah.
You know, people that have already committed their money, and second of all, it's a way to get money that has no strings attached, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
And if nothing else, though, it'll be a fun game. I mean,
oh yeah,
this is what he built his career on, so I'm sure he's going to release a really solid game. And if nothing else, it led to an adorable comic of the main character talking to Mega Man Volnut from Mega Man Legends about the lineage of the Mega Man franchise, and it was awesome. So if nothing else, it had that, but it's probably going to just be a solid game.
Speaking of Kickstarter, is Veronica Mars filming yet?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they wrapped.
Awesome.
So that should be next year still. Other news, I don't care about this, but you two might. So Final Fantasy X-X2 HD, the re-release, has a new 30-minute ending being made or developed.
Really? Is it like a cutscene?
I would imagine so. I don't know anything else, really.
imagine they're going to link it more into like X2 from the situation. I mean, wait. Is it at the end of X2 there's a 30-minute different ending, or the end of X and then going into X2?
It does not say. It just said that they're developing a new ending, probably for the series of 10 games.
I just don't know if I want to make a play it again. I've already played it. RPGs are not replayable very much for me.
You don't think so?
Not for me.
It depends on something. I've got, like, you know, really good memories for it. I can replay. Like, I can replay, like, Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy VI and Infinite.
Yeah. Those are more mechanics-based, less exploration story-based. Those are all about fighting the battles. Yeah, you're walking around the levels, but it's not like I don't know. I just feel like those games are more replayable. They're less – they're more mechanic-y, I feel like.
You think so?
I feel like they are. I feel like Chrono Trigger is more bite-sized, and you can just play it and have fun.
Well, Chrono Trigger in that aspect, because you can go through the whole thing in 12 hours.
Yeah,
you know,
but when you're talking about an 80-hour game, I don't know. For me, I don't want to replay 80 hours ever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there was that. I didn't really have thoughts because I don't like 10. So Ratchet & Clank Into the Nexus, though. I do care about this because I love Ratchet & Clank. And they are returning to the traditional platform action adventure type game that they had not made for a while after.
I feel like they just didn't make Ratchet & Clank games for a while. They were just making half-assed ones. You know, I don't even feel like they count.
I mean, All for One was all right.
I don't know. I don't feel like it doesn't even count.
I don't really care for Full Frontal Assault. I haven't tried it. It's a tower defense game.
Yeah, no
which
thanks.
It might lend itself well to. I don't think it got the best reviews,
though.
Well,
Deadlocked is sick, you know, but...
Deadlocked is fun. Yeah. I know some people hate it. I wish it was on the HD collection.
Deadlocked is fucking sick.
I've also been playing that. It's just kind of a slower go.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. I think it's nice that they're getting back to it. I love the games, and I think... Even though they can be a little samey time to time, it's so solid, I don't care.
Give me some of that sameness. It's been too long.
And honestly, the story is usually what I come for because those games are hilarious and well put together. It's a budget range price. It's only going to be $30, which
full
is...
Full game?
Yeah, it's a full game. Yeah. And they're releasing
it
at $30.
In this day and age, that's what they feel like they can get. You know, like the same thing with Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. That came out at $40. I mean, they really don't think they can command those prices. Same thing with the Lego games coming out at $50. They just don't think they can get it, I think.
It's not necessarily a wrong assumption. I know Sly came out at a reduced price, too.
Yeah.
Platformers, they just aren't as in vogue, at least not 3D platformers.
And they're not as involved in development either, so I think they can do it and make it make sense.
Yeah.
They're not full 3D like when I – like you know what I mean.
Right. So I think it'll be fun. I'm excited to see that universe again. All good there. After that, there was a Ubisoft leak.
Oh, I'm really excited about this because I have heard nothing about this yet.
So there was an image released with a whole bunch of logos of different games, including – but not limited to, because some of them seemed like they were either new IPs or I just didn't know anything about them. And there were some announced games on there, which lends to the credibility. Assassin's Creed Liberation HD was one of them. So the Vita game as a console release.
Boy, I hope they fix it up, because that game is busted up. That game needs serious work.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I heard that was even buggier than 3. And
it's
so
buggier
like...
than 3, but here's the worst part about it. It has a mechanic that's so fucked up where you have to switch costumes. And some of the, there's 3 costumes. One of them is the slave girl. One of them is like the assassin chick. And one of them is the girl in the elegant dress. And the elegant dress girl can't climb shit. So you're switched to this role where you can't climb to like distract guards. It's the stupidest breakdown ever. I mean, that game needs a fucking revamp. I mean, it's literally, I had no fun playing it. None.
That's weird.
It's really fucked. You can't jump and run and fight as the fucking, anyway.
So there was that. There was something called the Epic Quest for Mega Loot, or I forget exactly because I didn't write that one down. Rayman Fiesta Run, which I would imagine is a sequel to the mobile game. Right? Isn't there Rayman Jungle Run or something?
Oh, yeah, and it's great.
So probably a sequel to that.
Okay.
There's a new Rabbids game. Not really a surprise, because they've been churning those out for years.
Yeah.
And then this was the interesting one, something called Assassin's Creed Pirates, which I would imagine is...
That sounds like a Kinect game or something.
Who knows?
Or a Facebook game.
Yeah, that's going to be like a Facebook game or like a, you know, something for a portable. They released a ton of those games. It's just the side ones with it.
Yeah,
that's what I'm expecting for that.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll tell you what. Here's what I don't understand about Assassin's Creed. And I haven't finished 3 yet, so I can't really talk super intelligently about this, but I'm going to try to anyway. The The thing about those games I don't get is, okay, so you make the Ezio trilogy, and it's like, and so Desmond is obviously in the first game, and then he's in the throughout the Ezio trilogy, right? Then you switch to like revamp the whole franchise with Assassin's Creed 3, but you let that be the end of the Desmond part. Like, that just makes no sense to me. And then 4 comes out. And then 4 is like, first of all, the way they're going with the whole, like, there's an Abstergo, you're watching, you're basically playing an Abstergo, what is it,
it's basically like Abstergo made an Assassin's Creed video game, and then you're playing the Assassin's Creed video
QA
game.
QA testing it or some shit.
You're, yeah, like, and so like, it's like a game Abstergo within a game that is the Assassin's Creed game.
But, you know, I just don't get it. But then, okay, if you're going to do that, make a clean break. Start in Japan, or if you're going to start with pirates, don't make him a Fenway. Like, I just don't get why it just seems like a
Kenway. Yeah,
it just seems like a bad choice to overlap that if you're not going to overlap the other parts. I mean, make a clean break. Don't you think it seems weird?
I agree, and I think what they really realized. I mean, I think they're really bad for this. I like Assassin's Creed because I like the ideas behind it.
Yeah,
and I think it's a cool mix that's not fantasy or sci-fi or World War II.
It is unique,
and I like that about it. But they make so many decisions where I'm just like, God, why do you guys always just cater to the audience and try to pump it out as quick as possible? And it's pissing me off lately with it. I don't even know if I'm going to pick up 4, honestly.
I mean, it's a different – well, yeah, but Pirates can be cool. Yeah, Pirates. The world looks amazing.
I'm excited for that. I'll say this. What I don't get about that franchise is there really a big fan base that gives a shit about the present day arc? Because that's been the biggest issue with it.
That's the vocal minority issue, but I think some people like it.
Well, the third game's a mess, and you're not there yet, so I won't spoil it, but – it leaves it in such a place. I don't even know why they would bother at this point. They could get away with just doing straight assassin stories, I think.
I know, but the everything about it up to now, the interface, the idea of the animus, even the way that you play it, the buttons are supposed to be like, you know what I mean?
What I think would be the weirdest thing is they took out the future one with it, is it would mess up the pacing. Then I think that would be the weirdest thing with it, because the future one's always, like in the games, it's, you know, 1776, next time 1780. And so they do going to the present day so that when you go back, that 4-year gap happens and it gives a little pace. If that just jumped immediately, I think that'd be a little weird.
And that's
usually when they use like all of the modern day stuff, is to just do a quick intersection so that transition doesn't feel as weird.
And I don't think that I think the idea is awesome. I remember when Jade Raymond, when the first Assassin's Creed was teased, and when Jade Raymond was still involved with the game, and she was one of the visionary Ubisoft people, you know, creative directors. So that game was like shown, and all we saw was the Altair stuff. And then as the game was going, you'd see those little high tech sci-fi blips going on in the background, and everyone was like, "What's that? What's that?" And she's like, "This is a very unique, brand new IP for us, and we're not revealing yet what that is." But like, that was like a big part of the conceit for them. It always has been that this is a simulation. This is not, you're playing that character in that time, but it's a simulation. And they built everything around that. When you push a button on the controller, it's supposed to be you as the future person, obviously, pushing a button in the Animus or controlling the Animus through an interface. So it brings the gameplay and you know, in segues, and I'm saying the obvious, but it brings the gameplay into the fiction, you know, and it makes it work that way. So it really feels like, I don't know, it makes more sense. But what they fucked up is that the Desmond stuff just wasn't good like it should have been.
Yeah, it just wasn't entertaining. Right. And it's just like every single time it's like, we got to do a big twist that we're not really going to care about later or care about the twist at the end of it.
Yeah, I know.
And that's probably my biggest worry with 4, because the way 3 ends, they kind of write themselves into a corner. They're either going to have to sort of retcon it or just make some shit up, which is what they do well with the Desmond stuff anyway, so I guess they'll go that route. But it is a question of how are they going to fix this into their fiction? And I don't know that I've ever really cared. So I don't know. We'll see on that.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think that having the series have a real protagonist in the future for every episode, and then just the newest game just doesn't have like a real protagonist. But they were sort of teasing that maybe this guy, this Abstergo QA guy or whatever, will be the next protagonist, but maybe not. Maybe that'll be the secret surprise. I don't know where they're going to go with it, but to just have like some stand-in guy at that point, just get rid of it completely. I don't know. It's weird.
At this rate, we'll find out he's Desmond's secret brother, and it'll be the big twist.
You're probably fucking right. And everybody will be like, half people will be up in arms, and half the people will be like, that's so cool, like me.
Anyway, Other than that, there was Metal Gear Solid 5 controversy.
Tell me. I didn't hear this.
It wasn't a super big thing. They revealed this new sniper character named Quiet, who is a mute and is a badass sniper, but she wears a bikini top, and you can see her thong coming out of her torn in the thighs jean pants sort of thing. And Kojima was poorly translated because, you know, he was saying originally what he said was he wanted the characters to be more erotic. And then he said, no, what I actually meant was I would like them to be sexier. And there's been this whole up in arms thing about the characters and the sexiness and that being the focus. And I think it's a bit overblown myself because I don't really see how it's out of line with some of the stuff Metal Gear Solid has done in the past.
In the defense, I mean, I think that's a bad argument against it. I mean, for me, I don't think we should keep this history of the Metal Gear Solid thing, because that's sort of like saying, yeah, they're doing something sexist now, but they've always been sexist. I mean, because that's like the argument that you're there. It's just like, that's very weak to me.
Maybe that was the poor way. I don't know that it's necessarily that it being sexist is part of the series. I just think that he struck the balance before in having the characters be sexual but still be compelling characters. And I'm sure that's going to be the case with this character.
I'm just saying, why can't she wear a shirt?
That's
why does she have to wear a bikini if she's a sniper?
She don't want to wear a shirt. What if she don't want to wear a shirt, Tim?
Yeah, okay, yeah, she's a sniper going to war. It's like, oh, I just don't want to wear a shirt. But Solid Snake, all the other people, they got their fat armor, you know, they got their stuff. It's just like, oh, but the girl's like, I just need a bikini right now. That's what I really need.
It's the desert. They're hot. She's thinking it's poorly, but still, I don't know. I'm not saying either way. I just think it got overblown and maybe a poor mistranslation. I don't think it's really that big of a deal, and I'm sure she's going to end up being a good character. And that's really all that matters. If it comes out and she's just there as a sexy, ditzy object, that would kind of be against the series in a way. So, I mean, I think what's important is how she's characterized in the game.
I don't disagree, but I just think it's always a weird thing in games, because this happens all the time. I mean, it happens in Dragon Crowns, where it's just like, you could make a well-developed female character, she's still going to be in a bikini the whole time. Like, why she got to be in a bikini all the whole time? Yeah. Why can't you have, you know, a girl decked out in armor? And when they do, it's like, wow, here's the one who's not in a bikini. It becomes, you know, a thing.
Yeah, that's like, part like of the, she's maybe a dyke or something like that.
Or like, you know, she's more chaste and stuff like that. Or she's more honorable. It's not just like...
It can't just be like, she looks more like a normal woman, actually, so she's normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I honestly do think that it is, in a way, it shows that things are moving forward. Because this year has had a good number of female protagonists that are just women and not necessarily over-sexual. I mean, maybe not a lot, but still, you had Lara Croft. You had, what's her name from Remember Me? It's been building up where there are more characters. Nilan, that's it. Where they're just women. And I think that's a good thing. I think at least we're getting those games. And maybe, I don't know. I'm not saying I'm not defending the bikini. I'm just saying I don't know that it's necessarily a super big deal. But at the same time,
large proportion of people that play games are like 13-year-old, you know, just into puberty boys.
I mean that is a large proportion, but you know, I don't think that justifies
it. Saying it's responsible.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like every excuse is just a sort of like, oh, it makes money, and they've always done it, and it's just like that doesn't make it not. You know,
exactly.
In that way with it.
Well, the whole way, I mean, if you want to go that far, though, Tim, we could say the whole way game development is done is fucked, because a lot of it's about money decisions instead of creativity. You know what I mean?
I mean, I wouldn't even necessarily. I think that would be an alternate discussion with it.
You can extrapolate out and you get there.
But I think you can have creativity, and I think you can have female characters. I even think you can have sexy female characters who aren't always in bikinis. I mean, like, every, you know, RPG, women always wear chainmail bikinis instead of armor. What's up with that? I mean, maybe not every single one. I don't know every single one that exists. But, you know, if you took 100 random RPG women characters and you threw them into a pat and you picked them out, you're going to get more chainmail bikinis than you are going to get armor. I don't know. And this is, you know, not saying whether we're saying erotic or sexy, because I think, you know, that was a bad translation error with it. I think it's just systematic in games right now, where it's just like, you know, we always assume a woman's in a bikini because they've always been in a bikini. And if you got a problem with that, why do you hate games? You
know? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I hear you.
So, yeah, there was that. Oh, and the last thing, this was announced a while ago, and we may have mentioned it, but there was a development that I think is cool. Pokemon X and Y has Mega Evolutions that are terribly named, because it's just like Lucario's Mega Evolution is Mega Lucario, which is awful. But they announced that in XY you will be able to get one of the three Kanto starters from the original game, and that they all now have Mega Evolutions, which is kind of cool. Some of them look really cool, like Blastoise now has a huge, like, mounted cannon on his back when he's Mega Blastoise, and Charizard looks even more reptilian. Bulbasaur's, or Venusaur's still just a big plant, though. So, I mean, you're going to get winners and losers in design.
But... Did you guys see the new 3DS XLs?
We didn't mention the 2DS.
Yeah, I know. I was going to get to that, too. But did you see the 3DS XLs? The Pokemon X and Y ones.
Oh. I guess they exist?
Yeah, they're pretty. So, anyway, what do you think of the 2DS, Jordan?
I'd forgotten about it when I was making news, so that might tell you something. I kind of get it. Obviously, if it's bad for kids' eyes and they want to make an alternative, I don't know why it's a flat tablet.
So they don't break the hinge.
That is a popular design.
So they don't break the hinge.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I don't get why it's getting so much hate. It's obviously for kids who have problems with the 3D and it's going to break them. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. Gamers do that. They love to hate. They love to hate on things.
Well, I mean, if it was a 3DS, if it was a 3DS XL, but it was a tablet, I would at least want to try it and see how it felt to not have that hinge that rattles a little bit. Like, that always does irk me. That's a little bit of my OCD gets to me. And the fact that there's a little looseness in that hinge pisses me off. So I almost wouldn't mind if the slate's comfortable, but it looks uncomfortable.
It's and it's because gamers get pissed off about anything because they think everything is about them. A lot of the times they don't want to understand that, yes, this is for younger people.
But here's the other
and
thing.
Potentially for a price point thing. I know some people who might, it is cheaper. They might get it just because it's less money and the 3D doesn't really matter on most of the titles.
So. Yeah, yeah. I've been turning on the 3D a little more lately, actually in response to this 2DS. Like, yeah, just maybe because I'm a contrarian, but also just I want to just see, like, okay, like, I know all these games are... It almost reminded me that all these games are actually made in 3D. Shit, you know, because I almost don't even look at that. So I turned on for... I actually played some Shin Megami Tensei 4. I forgot to mention that. Man, I played so much shit. But it's pretty fun. But that game, I turned on the 3D to check it out, and it's pretty cool to do dungeon crawling in 3D. I mean, you can't do it for any prolonged length of time, though. You know what I mean? And that's an RPG, so that's not going to work. And the same thing with Dream Team. I know I'm going to be playing the shit out of that game, and I'm not going to play that in 3D. I mean, come on.
I think Super Mario 3D Land is still the best example of how to do it right, and that's obviously a Nintendo first-party big release, and not every game is going to get that level of 3D attention. So, I mean, anyway.
Yeah. Well, It's interesting. I mean, I would like to hold one and just see what it feels like, you know?
Yeah.
I think that would be interesting. That brings us to the point where I think it's almost where we're recording. We're almost at the time we have to stop. So why don't we talk about the games we're going to be playing over the next couple weeks and then make our Last of Us spoiler cast our next episode next week. Down with that?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're out of time. Yeah. So
so it's like, what, an hour episode, I guess?
No, okay. No. We were at 45 minutes before when we were doing it. And then we... maybe an hour and 20, and then it'll be an hour and 30 when we're done. So let's talk about what we're going to play, because I'm really interested to hear what games... everything's coming out, and I'm really interested to hear what games you guys are excited about, what games you're not excited about that everyone else is. Where are your guys' heads at over the next month or two?
I'm going to pick up GTA 5. And that's about it, honestly.
What do you think of that game? Is it looking like it's going to be amazing?
I think it'll be solid. I hope it fixes some of the problems from GTA 4.
Which were? Because that game got 98.
Well, yes,
I just think
it's aged poorly. And I'm sure Rockstar knows that. I'm sure it'll bring in some stuff from Red Dead. But it's, yeah, I'm just looking forward to that. I've honestly seen very little preview footage or anything. I remember there was that Game Informer spread on it a while ago. That's about the limit of what I've seen. So, yeah, I'm just kind of looking forward to it.
Okay. How about... So you're going to pick up Assassin's Creed 4 when that comes out, right?
I guess. That's still 2 months away. I might. I probably will just Redbox it.
Yeah. What about Rayman Legends? Are you going to pick that up?
I might Redbox it, probably.
That game is getting some stellar reviews. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's doing well.
People are like, that game's got amazing reviews. Wow, something weird's going on here. This system will shut off. Hold on. That was weird. Okay, we're just getting used to the quirks of this new studio here. So
it's not moving. Yeah,
it is. No, okay. Yeah, I don't know why it was doing that. Anyway, Tim, how about you? What are you looking forward to playing?
Honestly, the thing I'm probably looking forward to most is Pokemon. I'm really psyched for the new Pokemon, honestly. That's what I'm looking forward to more than anything else right now.
Now, tell me about that. Is it going to be a full revamp? What's the deal?
What do you mean full revamp?
Well, I mean, Black and White were like a full redo, I thought. But now this is like yet another reimagining, or no?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say there were full revamps at all for Black and White.
Okay, okay. There was something that was big difference about Black and White. I remember people talking about it. They were saying that like it's gone 3D or something. Something
I mean,
happened
it was big. As different as any Pokemon game has really been. There hasn't been a huge change since Gold Silver. I mean, I think Black and White did a good job of introducing a new feel and making the story
wasn't
more relevant.
Wasn't it like the first time that there was like a whole, like the entire game was new Pokemon?
Oh, yeah, that was the big focus, was that you would only capture new Pokemon during your first playthrough.
Okay. And then this one, like I remember that another big thing was that in that one, it went to like 3D models or something.
Yeah, they did introduce some new 3D stuff, but it wasn't anything major. I mean, it was like any Pokemon sequel or new generation. There were minor changes, but that were fairly big if you'd been following the series,
yeah.
You would notice. Or if you hadn't played a game since like the first one, you'd notice a lot of different things.
And so for the jump to the 3DS version, what are they teasing?
The big one here is that it's a fully 3D world for once. I mean,
there's a lot of changes with it too from like a gameplay perspective. Adding an entirely new type will change a lot of things with it. It'll make a lot of things more viable and a lot of things that were really strong weaker before with it. And adding the Mega Evolutions will expand the possibilities of use of Pokemon a lot with it. I also think this next one coming up is the first one in a long time where I've liked all of the character arts that I've seen. Like, all the new Pokemon I thought looked cool. Well, the past ones, I'm like, that kind of looks like a piece of crap on top of a white piece of crap. You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, that it seemed uninspired to me. I didn't like the way that Black and White looked at all, but I liked this new one a lot.
I will agree. They've had a lot of cool designs, though I will say, it's apparently tradition now to just come up with the weirdest possible thing each generation. So there is a living sword Pokemon that like unsheaths itself in battle.
Awesome.
I'm just saying it's an odd design, not that it's lame.
Yeah, I mean, but you got those stuff. But like the new stuff, I think it looks like, you know, very Wyvern-ish. And the other one looks got like a good Kirin, sort of like the X and Y Pokemon that they're looking with it. Some of the, you know, looms there. What I liked about the first Pokemon is everything was very animal-like, and you know, it was sort of a combination of animal and nature and most of the stuff with it. And I think they kind of went away from that, but they're coming back to that in this one. You get a lot of that, and I always thought those were the best looking ones with it. So I'm looking for, honestly, Pokemon the most. I don't know if I'm gonna get Assassin's Creed 4, honestly. Like,
really?
that's another one that I was thinking for, but it's just like, the more I think about it, the more I'm just kind of like, I like the series, but I may wait, you know, 8 months so that they fix all the bugs that I know are gonna be there.
Yeah, I mean, it is. You have amazing patience as far as waiting for launches in a way that I don't. Like, you can wait till next year's Black Friday sometimes to pick up the games, you know? And I just don't have that. I really want to play them when they're new. I really enjoy that.
And honestly, given how close they're coming out, I probably would like for Assassin's Creed. I'll probably wait for Black Friday because I got Assassin's Creed 3 for $25 last year.
That was crazy, yeah.
I probably will wait on, not Pokemon, I probably will be day one on that because, damn, it looks good.
Okay, how about Beyond Two Souls?
Yeah, I'll be getting that too.
I'm really psyched for that.
I'm not as psyched as I was before. Like, as
really?
I've been going on time, I've just sort of like, you know, I'll probably pick it up, but I don't know. It may
is
be it, a game
is that
I'll
about
actually,
you, or is that about the game and what you've learned about it?
I think it's just been over time. You know, it's just sort of like, you know, faded
I think
with
you're
me.
Forgetting.
When it comes out with it.
You're
yeah.
forgetting how awesome Heavy Rain was and how awesome David Cage's games are.
I mean, that is the thing with it. It's like, it may be when I finally get it, it's like, oh, this is awesome. But for me, I'm just sort of like, I'm probably going to get that, but I'll probably wait a little bit. Honestly, I might pick up Dragon Crown after those ones, though.
Oh, yeah?
After I played Sky. Yeah. Like, I mean,
you were enjoying it then a lot.
I was enjoying it. Yeah, it's like it's good for just,
if you
know,
get it,
random
we can play
killing stuff
online. I never have anyone to play those co-op games online.
Yeah.
With.
I mean, but it's good for just random button mashing, killing, you know, old school style. And that's kind of what I'm in the mood for. And so.
Yeah. Awesome. How about Titanfall? Is that that's not even coming out this Christmas, right? There's a lot of stuff that's come out of Gamescom, these games people are talking about, so I just wanted to get your take. How about Call of Duty Ghosts? What do you guys think?
There's a dog you can play as.
Can you play as him?
Yeah. Not a lady, though. No, I think they did finally add a female character. But anyway.
Okay, Arkham Origins.
That'll probably be all right.
That's a day one purchase for me. I mean, those games are really fun.
New developer, different feel. I mean, I'm not saying it'll be bad, but again, you didn't even like Arkham City that much,
no,
so I don't know why
true.
You're that excited.
No, because, well, here's the thing. My expectations were way too high with Arkham City. way too high. Like, I was really thinking that game was going to be – I mean, the amount – the extent to which I loved Arkham Asylum. I mean, that game was so fun. And the interiors are what made it fun, you know.
I
and,
do.
And the stealth, you know, what do they call them? The Predator missions or whatever? What do they call that stuff?
Yeah, Predator stuff.
Yeah, that stuff is awesome. And this game just didn't do that as well. And so that's why I didn't really dig it. Watch Dogs is going to be huge. I know we're all going to play that, right?
Yeah, probably might pick it up.
What are you guys
I'm
excited honest, about?
I'm honestly not that excited about Watch Guys.
I thought are we avid gamers or not? What are you guys pumped about?
What does that mean? You say it like I have to buy, like, get every game that comes out with
no,
it.
No,
you know?
what it means is like, this is like the most exciting time for gaming, and you guys don't sound like you're like pumped.
I don't know. It's just a lot of these games, they sound like they're hyped up a lot, but I want to see them in gameplay, and I think when I do, they'll be, you know, acceptable, but not mind-blowing.
Yeah, I've learned, you know, I'm not letting myself really get pumped about anything unless it's something extremely special. Because you know what? I've been burned on every game I've been excited about this year. The Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite. It's just been a case of, oh, so screw it. I'm not going to get excited. I'm
That's
just going to let what happens happen.
Oh, I got
one.
I got one. Lego Marvel.
Yeah, that'll probably be good.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm ridiculously there. That actually reminded me. There's something else.
Okay.
I can't remember, though.
Oh, no. That's not good. How about the new Zelda, Link Between Worlds?
I'm wary of that. Yeah. I'm on record as wary of that. Yeah. You should get Disney Infinity. They added Columbia to it.
Oh, yeah. Why should I get it? I don't even like that freaking game. I've gotten to the point now where I barely even liked Infinite, man. That's sad. I mean, I don't know. When the new DLC, I don't think we ever talked about this. I think it was announced in between podcasts. But there was DLC announced for Bioshock Infinite. You know about this, Tim, right?
Yeah, I don't know the finite details, but I saw like a couple of videos before.
Here are the details. It's a return to Rapture.
Yeah, I know. I saw that with that.
But you're Elizabeth and Booker. In the first one, you're Booker in Rapture, and basically doing all the Bookery stuff, but in Rapture. I mean, that's going to be awesome. I'm just a return to Rapture. I mean, Rapture is so much better than Columbia as a setting for me.
Yeah.
And then the second one, you're going to play as Elizabeth, and it's going to be more of her. And I didn't really think they integrated the whole warping stuff in and out well enough in the first one. It kind of felt tacked on to me.
It always just felt to me like a little slight power-up system.
Yeah,
you know?
Not that necessary. Here's some health packs. Great. You know, I mean, I might need one. But you could have just had health packs there. Mm-hmm. I don't need a fucking void to warp in from. But anyway, so the health packs, you know, the Elizabeth mechanics, they're taking that to the next level, and that game is going to be you play as Elizabeth. And that's like how you work. So it's going to be more like planning and setting up traps and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be two DLCs. I think they're going to be $15 each. And they're supposed to be very, like, meaty, like Minerva's Den-ish.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's going to be cool. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm hoping that gets me excited again. I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, I like Bioshock Infinite. I wasn't blown away with it. Yeah. I wasn't blown away with the first one, though, so it's just
Yeah, I hear you. And then we don't really play, like, the Battlefield games here, right?
Not really.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff is lost on us because we're not huge multiplayer gamers. A lot of the stuff's very multiplayer.
I just don't enjoy first-person shooters that much. I mean, I like cooperative ones with it, but like most of the time I just feel like I'm getting shot in the back and then being called a faggot. And if I do good, then I'm being called a faggot. And it's just like everything I do, it's like, wow, this is just isn't fun right now.
Yeah. How about the Wonderful 101? I know that it's prohibitive because it's on Wii U, but what do you think of that? Does that look kind of cool?
I don't even know what that is.
It's really kind of a neat game.
It's on Wii U. I mean, for example, I'm super excited about Sonic Lost World, but I'm not going to play it for God knows how long because it's a Wii U exclusive.
I don't know why it is. Why would they do that to their potential customers?
Because they do that that's been the pattern, is you get a 360 Xbox, Wii. 360 Xbox, Wii U. It's not that surprising.
Yeah.
It's sort of the pattern they've gone with, so I don't know.
Okay. Awesome. Well, on that note, I guess on the next podcast we'll do maybe we'll do a quick spoiler cast and release it as like a special small episode. We could do that.
I'm fine with that. We need to get some new content out.
Yeah, let's get some content out there. It's been too long. Now that we're in the new studio, we're good to go, and I'm really pumped. Well, I hope you guys get really pumped about the new games coming out, man. I know I am. It's going to be an awesome season. I bet you guys will be surprised.
I want to be. Stuff. I'm just saying, lowered expectations are the way to go.
Yeah. Hey, wait a second. We did establish that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Hey, Puppeteer, what the hell is that?
Getting great reviews.
What is it?
You play as a puppet, and he can switch heads, and the three heads act as both his life, because when he gets hit, he loses a head.
Oh, does he?
And they offer different mechanics. I don't know. I know it's getting great reviews.
Is it almost out?
Yes.
That's going to be really cool. And then all the Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 remix. Yay. That looks interesting. All right. Well, on that note, I'm Rich Lepore.
I'm Jordan Alseca.
And Tim McNeil.
And we will be back much sooner than you think. Play some awesome games. Talk to you soon.